like film? Do you like comedy? Do you like your childhood memories?
One more take?
Yeah.
Lewis and Pete's Bad Nostalgia Film Club.
Each episode sees comedian Lewis Charlesworth and Pete Phillipson revisit a classic childhood film through the eyes of an adult to see how messed up it truly is. Be it Back to the Future for its story of incest, Mrs. Doubtfire for its tale of the creepy cross-dressing father babysitter, or Home Alone with its sinister home invasion toddler torturer nightmare.
Bad Nostalgia. The Vintage Series.
Hello there, people. Oh my goodness, we are back after a big, fat, sweaty 2-month break, is it, Pete?
Has it been? It's been longer than that.
Do you reckon?
Surely, yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
You're going to have to bear with us tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
Teething problems ahoy.
It's the first show back after a 2-month break, and we're a little bit rusty, and our lovely producer, Michelle, still isn't here.
In a weird, different kind of way, because before she wasn't very well, this time she's just gone AWOL. So we're not too sure. And I think we there needs to come to a point where we need to stop acknowledging this and just accept the fact that I am now physically and spiritually driving this baby.
You are driving the show, mate. Yeah, absolutely.
And we're going to have to keep our eyes on the technical aspect of things, because things keep sounding like they're about to take off in the Close Encounters of the Third Kind
of way. This
show is about to blow off.
Series 4,
1, 2, 3, 4. And what is the series going to be this time around?
It's the musical series, mate.
The musical vintage series,
yeah.
Baby.
Some of the first films we probably ever saw.
In our lifetimes?
Yeah, yeah.
Ever, yeah.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
In that respect, it predates Disney.
Yeah,
even if it wasn't made before Disney. Because these are the ones, these are your bread and butter, aren't they?
Yeah.
These are the films that everyone, like our generation, our children's generation, they're going to be if they grow up in my house, our parents, and maybe not our grandparents, unless you're from Bolton. All of those different generations, we all grew up starting from the childhood, grew up watching these films, and they brought us into the world, didn't they? And they educated us. So that's why this series is going to be particularly interesting, because these are the films that we grew up with from day one. These are the films that taught us about our morality and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So what have we got this series, Pete? Do remind me.
Today, mate, we've got none other. We're starting big.
We're starting wide. We're casting our net very wide this time.
We are, yeah. We're doing none other than Mary Poppins.
Oh, Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins.
For me, right, Mary Poppins. Right, let's just get this
Shall we get this nostalgia music going?
Sorry, guys, right, really do bear with me. Serious teething problems today, because I do not know where I am. I've got a level with you, and you as well, Pete. You know, me and Pete don't really talk before we come on the show. This is me and Pete literally catching up after almost 3 months away from each other. It's been really hard, Pete.
I mean, it's
a lot of commitment to the show. Even though we actually like each other, we forcibly don't see each other for 3 months because of the show.
I know, mate.
The past week for me, I crashed my car and I was burgled. So that's my preparation. All right, sorry, Pete. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder never saw each other.
They did.
They never interacted socially.
And one of them was pink and the other one was brown.
That's not why I said it. No, that wasn't what was getting
I thought
at.
You were bringing it back to our thing. I actually wasn't.
I was just saying it because that's
really.
It's a serious. It's a comedy.
You're laughing so much. I actually believe it. Because you're actually not.
No,
realized.
I didn't.
I thought that's the only reason why you said it.
No. I was saying it because, honestly, I remember watching an interview with Gene Wilder and he was saying how him and Richard Pryor, they had their own gangs and they never saw each other socially, ever.
I thought you were just going to pick any black-white combination. like Lady Henry and Chris Tarrant from Fizz was. We're just like them, aren't we? I thought you were literally going to pluck anything.
No, mate, I didn't
it's
even
like
think.
When you separate salt and pepper when you're in a restaurant and then you get them back together. Here we go, already. Good. That's giving us a bit of momentum, hasn't it? Bit of racism, as we do. There we go. What's the show about? Sorry. So, Mary Poppins, vintage series, series four, really getting into our stride now, baby. We know how it works. There's no preparation, but we know how this show works. We've established it. We're on Podomatic and iTunes. We've got people in Uganda listening to the Lion King episode. Probably never listen to us again after that because it was a bit insulting. We've got all sorts of people all over the world tuning in. We're going to keep growing. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep being. We are the Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder of Fab Radio International. I really liked my reference to Lenny Henry and Chris Tarrant from Tiswas. Fucking hell, I don't even know where I got that from. I wasn't even bored when they were doing that shit. I just know my multiracial stuff. Right, so let's put on the background nostalgia music as we talk nostalgically about Mary Poppins.
That was a smooth segue, mate. That was perfect. Like you've never been away.
As good as gold.
Yeah, mate. Yeah.
As good as I've ever been with that, is it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, cheers, pal.
Yeah.
I've missed you the past 3 months.
I've missed you too, mate.
I should get over that whole thing.
Yeah.
You came to my house once, didn't you? You came to my house.
Oh no, yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah.
And we ended up. This isn't nostalgia about our relationship. Let's just get on with it.
Yeah.
Right. So, segue music. Good. Yeah. So here we are. We're going to talk nostalgically about Mary Poppins. I've beaten around the bush because I was so young the last time I even saw this film.
Me too, yeah.
There's very little I can actually remember.
Yeah.
Although I do remember feeling fondly of this film.
Yeah.
But not the overall package.
Yeah.
As such. It was more specific things within Mary Poppins I really, really loved.
Oh.
I don't know if you were the same as me. I would always
fast forward. Mate, you know what I'm like with the specifics. I think you remember this film.
Yeah. I would always fast forward.
Because whenever we talk about these films, you always talk about the feeling and the emotion. You're like, I just remember. And I just remember the overall feel of the film and when I watched it, what it brought out of me. And then when it comes over to me, when I talk about nostalgia, I'm like, well, at 3 minutes 34, I remember in the first scene. So I like it that you're going with the specifics, but carry on.
Okay, I'll carry on and see if you match me then.
It's
the same as you, right? I don't know, when I was watching with Rosie last night, she was saying, oh, I still watch this film over and over again now. And I was like, I've not seen it, I don't think, since I was 7 years old. And then she was like, oh, yes, well, it is a bit girly, isn't it? And I thought, oh, is that what it was? And then I started to think about it more and more, and I was like, maybe that's what it was. When I was a little kid, I kind of dismissed a lot of the magic in Mary Poppins as just being girly, and I fast-forwarded through all what I consider to be the dirge, and just to the laddie, let's rock with the special effects moments, because those are the bits I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
The only bits that stood in my mind, really, that were incredibly striking for me was the animation bit.
Yeah.
When they go into the magical cartoon world, and also the bits with the laughing, flying into the air.
Yeah.
So all the kind of special effects heavy bits were the bits that I remember.
What
I didn't remember was all the exposition at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot there was that level of singing going on as well.
There's
about 2/3 singing to dialogue, I would say.
Yeah. That's what it seemed. Well, that's the thing. Maybe it was lads. Maybe we that was the girly bits for us.
Yeah.
We weren't paying attention to the singing and the la-di-da. We were all about the lads.
Lads.
We were all about the chimney sweeps.
Bit of chimney sweeps.
Bit of
Lanky Van Dyke.
Yeah, yeah.
That name will always be rude. oh my god, how did that not make it to my notes? His name.
Dick Van Dyke. Dyke.
Yeah, Dick Van Dyke. I'm sure Van is like Dutch for with. Dick with a Dyke. That's a bit offensive. Right, so, what else did you think?
Right, mate, I have got some notes. I think this was the first musical that I ever saw on TV, I'm pretty sure. I always remember it was me and my sister who used to watch it. I loved it because I had a selection of really shit babysitters when I was a kid. So this was like, you know, the fantasy, you know, the kind of babysitter that, you know, I was dreaming of one that was loads of fun. I remember thinking the finger clicking thing, tidying up the house, was real, and that was actually possible. I sort of admired Mary Poppins. I was a little bit scared of her as well. I felt her authority, and I really admired her. And I remember when Dick Van Dyke showed up, it was like a point. I've never known a film like come alive so much. as to when like he appears for the first time. That's when the film like really like jumps into motion. And mixing people with the cartoon characters as well was just like absolutely blew me away. I mean, really, I know it looks a bit tame now, but like that. But well, to be honest, you know what? It still actually looks all
I
right
think
now.
It still holds up.
Yeah.
I was swept away because obviously it's 2D animation, and we see that as old fashioned. But the way they interact with them, and the dance numbers, and when he slides them off that kind of long thin object onto the table, it really swept me away. It still has the ability to do that.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's still a timeless classic. Why it's still, it's never gone out of print, apparently, a bit trivia. And they're doing a remake now, aren't they? There's still a demand for this film. There's still an appetite for it. It still sweeps you away. And I've got to say, when I watched it last night, this hasn't happened to me that often on the show, but I found it more enjoyable than I think I've ever found it.
Yeah.
Like, when I was a kid, like I say, I would always fast-forward it. But now, I'm like, we start off with a bit of women's lib at the beginning.
Yeah, sister.
Yeah. I was like, oh, God, there's probably a bit of politics. Political undercurrents going on. Oh, my God, it's a comment on politics and equality for women. But we'll get into that because it's actually quite fucked up. It was really lovely, and I was swept by it, and it just made me feel nostalgic for it, even though I never really absolutely loved it in the first place, to be honest. But
that's really cool.
You know, it's a very sweet, beautiful film, really well-meaning, lovely, very candy corn cheese fest, and it's just
Julie Andrews as well is just like
divine,
captivating, isn't she? She's incredible.
Yeah.
She's absolutely like. Yeah, it just makes you realise how actors back then could just do absolutely everything.
Do you know what I mean? You marvel at them. Dick Van Dyke as well.
Yeah.
He is an absolute all-rounder. Singing, dancing, acting, everything. But, like, the dancing with such, I don't know, independent verve. Like, his own charisma comes through every limb of his body.
Yeah.
You don't see that with, I don't know, Hugh Jackman.
That's... the perfect. I was thinking of one then, but like you've summed that up perfectly. That's the perfect actor to choose.
It is actually, because he does try to do that.
He does, doesn't he?
He's not of that ilk. Whatever he tries, he really isn't.
No, he's not.
Interesting. Okay, so hopefully this has gone all right so far. There aren't too many technical issues. I'm really paranoid that they can't hear us speak for some reason, but hopefully they can. If you are listening live, give me a text. Get in touch, tell me.
Tweet in if you can hear us.
Although, if you can't hear us, you're not going to hear us.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Tweet in, are they?
Not that we get any tweets anyway,
not that we get
so
tweets
anyway,
no, unless they're from Uganda.
Uganda.
Uganda. Oh, look at you. Hey, that was really good.
Punitry.
I hope they heard it. So, we're just going to listen to the beautiful trailer, and then we're going to tear it a new bottom hole. See you soon.
Light up the sky. It's the entertainment thrill of a lifetime. Mary Poppins, Walt Disney's newest and most delightfully entertaining motion picture. Starring the toast of Broadway's musical stage, the incomparable Julie Andrews.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
And America's fabulous funny man, Dick Van Dyke, as you've never seen him before. Poppins, the fabulous adventures of the world's most charming and delightfully eccentric heroine.
I can tell you one thing, Winifred. I don't propose standing idly by and letting that woman, Mary Poppins, undermine the discipline. There's been something odd, I may say, extremely odd, about the behavior of this household since that woman arrived.
Yes, dear?
Ow! They're at it again!
Yes, the wondrous and magical ways of Walt Disney's Mary Poppins so completely and so hilariously discombobulate the family with whom she comes to stay in such delightfully amazing ways. Their lives are never again quite the same. And nor will yours be. when you've been touched by the magic of this magnificent new motion picture from Walt Disney, Mary Poppins.
Ew, it's a jolly holiday with Mary.
Oh, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Goodbye, Mary Poppins. Don't stay away too long.
Bad nostalgia.
I want some more.
What?
Please, sir. I want some more.
We'll ruin your childhood.
We certainly will ruin your childhood. Oh my god. And this is, we need to give ourselves a bit more credit. I think this is going quite smoothly so far, actually.
I do. Yeah. Still a bit of echoing.
Is there?
Yeah.
Right, I'll turn it down a bit. Sorry about
just
that.
Just make a note of that, mate.
I'll make a note of that. Don't worry, I'll sort it out in the post edit. I'll have to sort everything out in the post edit. Just rest assured, people, most of the people who listen right now, the version you're listening to is as good as it's going to get. right. Right, Peter. So we've done a bit of nostalgia. Oh, actually, did you ever relate Mary Poppins to any of your childminders? Did you have childminders when you were a kid?
I did, yeah, but as I mentioned, the selection of babysitters I had weren't that great. So Mary Poppins, that's why I enjoyed the film so much, because it was like, what if this woman was your babysitter?
Right.
And that's another thing I really liked about it as well, the sense of mischief. And you know how exciting it is when you looked after another adult in your own house for the first time? When you looked after an adult.
What were you surrounding the invalids?
No, when you looked after.
Get a part-time job in a nursing home. When you're 15.
The first time you get a babysitter and it's like, oh, this is an adult looking after me that isn't my mum or dad.
Oh,
do you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And that feeling of like, they don't know the rules.
Yeah.
They don't know. And that you really get a sense of it from that film.
It's either thrilling or scary, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It can fall either way, yeah.
And that's exactly what Mary Poppins is. She's a bit scary. Do you know what I mean? She's and strict, which is how it was intended in the books.
But at the same time, she's such an outlet for loads of fun.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
parents.
Yeah,
that is totally what it's all about.
Exactly, mate. Yeah,
because I had one childminder who was quite strict and it was quite scary. But
I bet you fancied her, didn't you?
I did fancy her a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then equally, I had another one who was at the other end of the spectrum who we could get away with doing anything with. So I put my hand up her skirt. So, let's deconstruct the...
You didn't, did you?
I did. She was called Barbara. She was really overweight. I was only six. Let's deconstruct the film, people. Right, Pete, let's do this. Like
right, mate.
Done it before. Do you want to give us a scene up?
Yeah, I'll give you a scene up.
It's got to be a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't think about this.
Because the plot's a bit thin.
Yeah, yeah. There's an...
Good luck.
Okay. It's time for the admin part of the show.
Right.
There's a bloke who is a very uptight, very posh banker. And he has two kids that he can't really control, and they sort of run riot. And he's got a wife as well, who, you know, is fighting for women's rights. So she's obviously doing very important things, and she doesn't have much time to look after the kids. And the kids just run absolute riot, and they go through a real selection of babysitters and sort of childminders, trying to find, you know, the right person to look after the kids, okay, basically. But no one wants anything to do with them because they're just like little shits who just run off. But the kids are getting a bit tired with their selection of babysitters as well, so they write down sort of their ideal babysitter, like she must be really fun, she must be pretty, blah blah blah. And the dad tears the note up and goes, don't be ridiculous, you're getting the babysitter that I want for you, someone who's really strict and who's going to make you behave. And he throws the note in the fireplace, and it somehow gets sucked up into the chimney, and I'm being really fucking specific here, it gets sucked up into the sucked up into the chimney, and the note somehow sort of gets put back together magically. And next thing you know, there's a woman swooping in on some clouds, some magical woman that's just come from nowhere. Is she Jesus? I don't know. But the woman is Mary Poppins, and she comes to the house and says, I'm the new babysitter. And she teaches the kids to respect their parents, but also she has loads of fun with them as well. She goes, they jump into a painting, and sort of the painting comes alive, and they're in this magical, like, cartoon world. And then they're dancing on rooftops, and there's a guy called Bert as well, who's a chimney sweep, who's like the Cockney, you know, 1-2-3 kind of guy. And they have loads of fun. And in the end, the dad is sort of realises that he was being quite sort of strict all along and wasn't really having much fun.
Yes.
And so it's sort of a lesson in a way to... all along Mary Poppins, the reason she was there was to teach the kids how to have fun but behave as well and respect their parents, and also get the dad to loosen up and have some fun and enjoy the time that he has on this earth.
Very good.
Can I stop now? Because
yes,
I don't know
please.
What I'm doing.
Stop. It's fine. You seem to...
Look
at your face.
No one has ever asked me to explain the film of Mary Poppins, and now I am doing it. It's fucking weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's one
what
of those
is
things
it?
You just took for granted, and when you actually try and break it down to what happens, you fall into an existential despair, which is what your face just told me.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like I needed to leave the room while I was stare into the abyss. But I'm glad we were there.
We're Pryor and Wilder, mate. Don't leave me.
We're Pryor and Wilder. Lenny Henry and Chris Tarrant. Right, so let's break this mother down. We've got Dick Van Dyke, who opens up, don't he? We like to start with the very first frame.
Yeah.
He addresses the screen, the camera.
Yeah.
But right at the beginning, never does it again. And what is he? He's a beggar. He's a beggar who is the most talented, skilled beggar I've ever seen. He's a man of all trades and a master of all trades.
Yeah.
He's a painter, like an amazing Van Gogh type painter.
Yeah.
He is a one-man band, as he is right at the beginning. He's a chimney sweeper.
Yeah.
I mean, firstly, I don't know why he's on the streets, because he must be a millionaire with all the stuff he's doing.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense. And at the beginning, he's performing his little one-man band outfit to all these... really upper middle class hoity-toity types in the 1920s London, and they all really really enjoy his little performance because it's Dick Van Dyke, it's hilarious. And then it culminates with him twatting himself in the face.
Yeah,
they love that, they absolutely love that. And then they all walk off and give him no money whatsoever. So it's quite a brutal opening for our central hero.
Well, I thought when I was a kid and I saw it that they all loved him, but now looking at it, they're just laughing at him.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? You know when you see like a homeless person on Market Street in Manchester who's like playing a musical instrument, and like, you know, they really really can't play it. And
the guy with no legs who plays the recorder, for instance.
People gather round.
I love his work.
And they look at him, and some people gather round and laugh as well. And that's kind of like what it was like, because his one man band, let's be honest, is the only thing that's a bit shit.
Yeah,
isn't it? He's amazing, but his one man band is like, you think everyone's giving him this admiration, but then they all leave and don't give him any money at all.
Yeah, it's
and
it's
that's
very,
really, really depressing.
It's
like watching that.
If they only get away with it because he's always so optimistic, isn't he? He's always so happy and chirpy, and he's got his silly accent, and it takes the sheen off everything, doesn't it? You don't realise how depressing his circumstances actually are.
Yeah.
And then we move on to the household where the little kiddies live with their father, and you have his opening number, and he sings a song about effectively how OCD he is.
Yeah.
Because he sings a song about, at 6:01 I have a sherry, 6:02 I sit down, 6:03 I read a little book. I'm like, fucking hell. To the minute, mate, that is OCD. And every day at 6:02 you have a sherry, OCD and an alcoholic. So we've got a seriously neglectful father who's a I don't know, he's got many multiple issues. I mean, OCD and alcoholism at the same time. Recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got the mother, obviously, who's leading the women's liberation movement.
I don't know about you, but that went over my head as a kid.
Totally.
I had absolutely no idea. I love that, though. I thought it was absolutely great. But it's quite dark when you think about it, because she gets back and she's like, oh, I've had a wonderful day. Janie got arrested. She was tied to a post and she got arrested, taken away by the police. It was fantastic. And it's like, she's about to be sent to a prison where she's going to get the shit kicked out of her and force-fed a dinner for about 2 months. Like, let's not forget what it was actually like. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
And there's also something really dodgy about this Emily Pankhurst kind of women's liberation movement subplot, right?
Yeah.
We need to break this down. This is what the show's all about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're a kid, you accept it. We're going back to it with fresh eyes. 2016, normal, liberal, lovely, beautiful young men eyes, right?
Yeah.
There's something dodgy about this, okay? So what have we got? What is this film about? It's about the neglect of these very rich parents of their children.
Yeah.
And how they realise their error of their ways at the end, okay?
Yeah.
But let's break that down further. What the man, okay, he's a banker, financier, he ignores his children in favour of money. That is something that is a wrong that needs to be righted, and he does that at the end, beautiful. But let's look at the female's predicament. The mother of the children. What's her crime? Her crime is that she wants equality for women. So she neglects her children, in inverted commas, right? She neglects them because she wants to fight for women's liberation and equality. I couldn't give a shit about those little weird Village of the Damned kids. If she's fighting for women's liberation in the 1920s, and this film was made in the mid-60s, when feminism was, like, really coming to a head, can we have some support for the women, please? Not stamp on them in a children's film, right? And what they're saying is that she neglects her children in favour of female equality, and then what happens at the end? She also realises the error of her ways by committing so much time to these silly little fanny merchants, right? She should be getting back with her kids and stay. What happens at the end? She gives up the liberation movement and she is a stay-at-home mother, so they don't need the services of Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Stop fighting for women, stop leaving the house, stay inside, cook dinner, look after the kids and fuck women off.
Yeah. And what happens to the dad? He gets a higher paid job, a promotion.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got it sorted because he's got his wife back at home making the tea and he's had a promotion and his kids love him.
There's a bit in the film as well, and I don't know if this is meant as a sick joke or if the film is completely unaware of it, but there's a bit where he's like, right, we need to talk about Mary Poppins, she's being ridiculous. And his wife goes, oh, I've got a rally to go to, dear. And she's like, no, I need you here. And she goes, oh, okay, darling. And I don't know if it's like a comedy. I don't know if, is that intentional?
They don't really play it for laughs, do they?
No.
It's like the total double standard of the film.
Yeah.
She's like a really militant feminist for the opening 2 minutes, and they're completely submissive for the rest of the film. We really didn't think we had anything for this film, did we?
I know.
Really, really sexist.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So you've got all those nannies who queue up at the door because they want to. It's like a Mrs. Doubtfire style, isn't it? You've got lots of people who want to audition to be the nanny of these little kids.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Village of the Damned Children, as far as you can see. And then they all mysteriously get blown away.
Yeah. Do they die?
That's what I was thinking.
Now with adult eyes watching that, do they just get blown away into orbit?
Yeah.
And then their face just ends up melting because they go so far into space.
50 yards up into the air.
Yeah.
They fly down. Like, they're dead, mate. And the kids,
they're dead, mate.
They're dead. And the kids, they're watching in the window, aren't they? And they're laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
They're laughing their heads off. And did you see this bit of trivia as well? All the people playing those nannies are actually men.
Really?
Men in drag.
I did think they were really ugly women.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
Men, mate. So I just don't know, that just makes it even creepier.
Are they all the chimney sweeps?
I bet they doubled up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just quite sinister. Right, what else have we got from this period? Did you have anything about the kids?
They're portrayed as these real little Asbo kids, but they never really do anything wrong, apart from at the start of the film.
Yeah.
You hear them smashing plates?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, yeah. when they, like before they actually enter the house, it, you hear like them like smashing loads of plates, and that's why the babysitter leaves.
So it's as if they retrospectively had to do it in the rewrite. They were like, we slag off these kids throughout the film, but they haven't done anything bad. Okay, redo the draft, have them smashing plates.
Yeah. Okay. Which is out of character when you look at them. Yeah. All they want to do is go off and fly a kite, and they're like bottling the babysitter, and like that's where she leaves.
This is a cute little song. Daddy, we love you. We want a little nanny. I want to smash your fucking plate in your head. Right, yeah, good point, mate. Good point.
Yeah.
So let's move the plot along. We see Mary Poppins. She turns up. Anything about her? She's beautifully played. Beautifully played.
She is, but when she turns up, like, she's a fucking arsehole, really,
isn't
she?
She's a bit of a dick. She's a bit of a fascist.
She's vain. She's bossy. She's arrogant. She... If this film's meant to be about women's liberation, and she's talking about how wonderful her appearance is,
yeah,
and how she's like practically perfect in every single way.
And she sings to herself in the mirror.
Yeah.
The version of herself outdoes the real version.
Yeah.
Such weird vanity moment. And then she threatens them with the police as well.
Yeah.
Did you see that bit? About halfway through the film, they're like, "We want to stay up and play with you, Mary." She's like, "If you do that, I'm going to call the police." I'm not exaggerating. That's what she says. That's the line. And she sings all the time, and on the face of it, it looks nice. But have you noticed that most of her songs to the kids is a form of manipulation?
Yeah, so try and get them to do what she wants to do, yeah.
To get them to clean the bedroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Two different songs to get them to go to sleep.
Yeah.
To shut the fuck up.
And when they do go off into this cartoon fantasy land and they come back and they go, "Mary Poppins, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. We rode horses. It was great." And she goes, "That sounds ridiculous. Shut up." She's going to send the kids mental. Do you know what I mean?
That's what she said she'd call the police. She's like, "No, we didn't. We didn't do any of that. And if you keep on talking about it, I'm going to call the police."
Yeah. Has she just given them acid? Is that what's happened?
What crime is that that she's reporting to the police?
Yeah, yeah.
False claims of animation world. 5 years. I don't know why Dalek sent them to jail. Right, okay, so let's have a bit of a segue and then focus on the second half of the film. And you know it, guys. Yeah, we're going to do That Song Is Fucked Up. See you soon.
Very well. I'll bide my time. And as for you, my fine lady, it's true, I can't attend you here and now as I'd like. But just try to stay out of my way. Just try.
Tune in every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on Fab Radio International.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
We'll ruin your childhood.
Ah, lovely. Right, before we do That Song Is Fucked Up, it's a bit of a funny one to do That Song Is Fucked Up for, because 2/3 of the film is a song.
Yeah, yeah.
So you are absolutely spoiled for choice. I didn't even know where to start for me personally, because we only just decided last minute that you were going to do it, didn't we?
Yeah.
So I had one eye out on the lookout to find something, and I was lost, because there were so many songs that kind of came in and out of each other. Weird turn of phrase. Right, But I got to say, there was one song that struck me. This isn't the real song that's fucked up. It's just me just getting carried away myself. But there was one bit where when they go into the animation world, and there's this weird like undercurrent between Mary Poppins and the chimney sweep guy, where they clearly want to fuck, but they're not allowed to because the writer didn't want any sex to be in the film, or something like that. So it's like this weird thing that is clearly acknowledged but never actually happens, which is just a weird tension. And then when they're in the animation world, Chimney Sweep, Van Dyke, Dykey Boy, Dicky Dyke, he sings a song to Mary Poppins, which kind of acts as like he's kind of serenading her, and it's all meant to be very flattering about her. But there's one part when he sings about all, it's not even implied, it's pretty explicit, that he sings about all the women he's fucked, and he lists that all of them and says really heavy innuendos, like, "Oh, you can have them for a good time, oh, she's charming, oh, she's a bit, oh." And then at the end of it, after he said like 20 of the women, he said, "But none of them are as good as you, Mary." And then she smiles. It's like, well, if in reality, if you said to your girlfriend, "I've shagged her, she was amazing, massive tits, great ass, really loved going down on me, or her anus smelled like cherries, or she was amazing, oh, I want to keep thinking about her, oh my god. But none of them are as good as you, babe." She'd slap you in the face.
Yeah, and he's probably only saying it because she tidied the house after.
Well, yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, he's getting out of it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Right, so, sorry, don't mean to trample on the song, because we've not started it yet. Pete, what song are you going to do?
I'm going to do The Life I Lead.
The Life I Lead. Thank you very much.
That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up.
The Life I Lead, or You Lead.
The Life I Lead.
The Life I Lead. Could you remind me when this song appears? Because I don't remember this one.
Okay. You mentioned it previously, mate, the OCD song.
Oh, so at the beginning.
Yeah, the beginning, yeah. So, the wealthy banker, the kid's father, comes in and starts singing this song about how great it is to be, you know, an Englishman in this day and age, and all about his routine and his lifestyle and how he's got, you know, everyone at hand and foot and how great his life is. Okay, so you know that's what this song is about. Do you want me to just go through the lyrics of the original song?
You approach it however you want to, mate.
Okay, so this is the song. Three quarters of the song. I feel a surge of deep satisfaction, much as a king astride his noble steed, when I return from daily strife to hearth and wife. How pleasant is the life I lead. I run my home precisely on schedule. At 6:01, I march through my door. My slippers, sherry and pipe are due at 6:02. Consistent is the life I lead. It's grand to be an Englishman in 1910. King Edward's on the throne. It's the age of men. I'm the lord of my castle, the sovereign, the liege. I treat my subjects, servants, children, wife, with a firm but gentle hand. Noblesse oblige. It's 6:03, and the heirs to my dominion are scrubbed and tubbed and adequately fed, and so I'll pat them on the head and send them off to bed. Our lordy is the life I lead. Okay.
That is so good.
Now, that song is really fucked up.
Yeah.
Because the guy singing it has no perspective, right? He's talking about how great it is to be an Englishman in 1910, right? And it's like, yeah, mate, that's because you're a really wealthy banker that's got servants and you live in a giant house, right? Somewhere down the road, there's a working class man, right, in 1910, and he's singing a song called The Life I Lead, but it's a bit different, okay? It's a bit more tragic, okay? And that's what the film doesn't address, okay? So what I've done, mate, is I've reworded the song, the lyrics in the song, I've reworded the lyrics in the song to give people an idea of what life was like in 1910 for the common man and common people.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Very creative, thank you.
Okay.
Propping up the episode.
Okay. I feel a pang of severe depression, much as a flea beside a steaming pile of dog shit, when I return from an 18-hour shift up a chimney to my fat, horrible missus. How pleasant is the life I lead. I run me home to a rough schedule. At 6:00, I punch my wife if dinner's not ready. At 6:45, when she stopped crying, I get her to run me a bath. Consistent is the life I lead. It's grand to be an Englishman in 1910. King Edward's on the throne. He hung me best mate for stealing an apple. I'm the best of a bad bunch, the highest functioning leper. I treat my children and wife with a firm but gentle fist. It's 7:30, and when I finish washing me bowls in the sink, I'll eat a bowl of Spam that's been scraped off a steeplejack's boot and then smack me toothless kids and tell them to fuck off before I throw an empty milk bottle at them. Ah, lordy is the life I lead.
Oh, above and beyond, Pete. Above and beyond. That was lovely. A lovely little
you wondered where I was going with that, didn't you?
I did. I was like, why is he reading out all the lyrics? Oh, lovely. Nice little parallels there.
Yeah.
Okay, that's beautiful. I really enjoyed that. I bet you enjoyed writing that. A little smirk on your face. Right, so let's go and play the song that Pete was just describing.
I feel a surge of deep satisfaction, much as a king astride his noble steed. Thank you. When I return from daily strife to hearth and wife, how pleasant is the life I lead.
Dear, it's about the children.
Yes, yes, yes. I run my home precisely on schedule. At 6:01, I march through my door. My slippers, sherry and pipe are due at 6:02. Consistent is the life I lead.
George, they're missing.
Splendid, splendid. It's grand to be an Englishman in 1910. King Edward's on the throne, it's the age of men. I'm the lord of my castle, the sovereign, the liege. I treat my subjects, servants, children, a wife, with a firm but gentle hand, noblesse oblige. It's 6:03 and the heirs to my dominion are scrubbed and tubbed and adequately fed. And so I'll pat them on the head and send them off to bed. Ah, lordly is the life I lead.
Winifred, where are the children?
Right, so here we are. We got the next session. I've just got to say, actually, I haven't said this yet. I do like to see this because I know people really heed my advice. Do follow us on Twitter. We are at Bad Nostalge, no I and A. Just at Bad Nostalge. Put it into your phone right now. Right, I'm not carrying on until you do it. Do it. We need more followers. Fuck's sake. And follow us on Facebook. We've even got a YouTube channel. We've got a YouTube channel. We are the real deal. Did you see that on Twitter recently? There was a completely random person I don't believe I've ever met. I'm sorry if we have met, but I don't believe I have. Found us online and said, tweeted us, liked it and all this kind of stuff, and said, people, you've got... Yeah, he's got quite a lot of followers. He said, people, you've got to listen to this show. It's so underrated. It's really good. Oh. And he's just... I don't know who it is. And he's just a really nice guy. Thank you very much. I love you.
Thank you, one person. Yeah,
thank you, one person. Yeah. There you go, man. It wasn't Gavin. So how about that?
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Right, so we've got a few more points before we wrap this baby up. Right, what have I got here? I've got the fact that Mary Poppins betrays the Dick Van Dyke character quite a lot. There's obviously, we've touched upon that before. There's a bit of affection between the two. You can say that, can't you?
Yeah, yeah.
There is a bit of affection there. But as soon as they leave the animation world, where they get to eat for free and they live a life of Riley and it's absolutely amazing, it's like heaven, they come back to reality, he's obviously back in the streets, it starts pissing it down with rain, and she's like, come on kids, let's just go back into the mansion and leave this tramp to stand in the rain.
Yeah.
I was like, well, what the fuck? She's got the ability to send him off into this, like, Caribbean paradise animation world.
Yeah.
And he's just like, why didn't she just let him live there?
She's just like his bit of rough.
Isn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
Just let him live in the animation world so we could shag Jessica Rabbit or something. You know what I mean? Just like living on the cobbles on the streets. Right. It's just not on, is it? It's not on.
It's not, mate. Nice.
Why? Why'd she do that? And then we've got his accent. We've not really talked about the accent that much. It's worse than I remember.
It is worse than I remember, yeah, yeah,
it's
as well.
It's confusing.
But his charisma just, you know...
Yeah.
It overshadows it, I think.
It does.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a tribute to his charisma that he doesn't get bogged down in his weird, fucked-up accent.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I don't know why he bothered with the Cockney thing. He's obviously aiming too high with that.
Yeah.
If he was going to do a British thing and he's an American, don't go for a regional accent.
Yeah.
Don't give yourself an extra hurdle to get over. Just do it at RP, and we get it, mate.
Yeah,
wearing rags, you're working class. Don't try... It's like me doing, oh, Lewis, we want you to play an Indian guy. Can you also be Indian? And, oh, if you don't mind, it's a South Kashmir accent. All right. What the fuck? Right, so it's always got to be Indian for some reason. I had Scotland and South Dundee, but I just thought... I don't know, just a bit... I don't like that as much. Right, so...
Comedy 101.
Cashmere, not Dundee. Have you got anything else?
It's got half a K in it. Uncle Albert. Is he just a manic depressive?
Which one's Uncle Albert?
The one who can't stop laughing, and then when he stops laughing, he starts crying.
He reminds me of my uncle, actually.
What, the one? Have I met him?
Yeah, Uncle David.
The solicitor?
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah.
He doesn't remind me of
him. Yeah, you're right.
You guys don't know that. So what were you going to say?
Is this just a metaphor for mental illness or something?
Yeah. Middle age.
Yeah, yeah.
Senility.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's either up high or he's down there. I found that really disturbing.
Yeah.
And then Dick Van Dyke starts crying as well when he's with him.
Yeah.
Why is he crying or laughing?
I found a lot of the jokes they make, I found it quite cringe, actually.
Yeah.
They kept doing them, and I was like, oh, God, this is so, like, really bad.
I hated that as well, because I was reminded of how funny I found it as a kid, but I couldn't I just couldn't get hold of that again.
A lot of the jokes are over my head now, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I would have just been laughing because I saw some adults laughing.
Also, the guy... Can we just touch on the old guy who's got a ship on top of his house?
Didn't understand that one bit.
Right. Does he have Alzheimer's?
I think must be some sort of running theme going on there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because he either was in the Navy and has just imagined, you know, all this stuff on top of his house, okay, and he's got, like, his little sidekick as well, and he's gone back to the time that's happiest for him, you know, when he was in the Navy. Or he wasn't in the Navy, and he's just gone mental, and he's actually built, you know, a ship on top of his four-bedroom detached house, and now he just fires cannons at chimney sweeps.
At chimney sweeps, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just move on to the chimney sweeps now you've just said that? Are you... You know what we're going to say, don't
you? What are going to do? God.
I have to do it, because...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Right, so the chimney sweepers. We all remember that bit, don't we, people? Wasn't it great? Yeah, oh, God. Stood on top of the rooftops, all dancing and singing. Such a great routine. Really athletic. Kind of a bit, I don't know, a bit R&B inflected kind of dancing, I would say. So let's break down why this is really fucked up. Because Dick Van Dyke, he's a chimney sweep, that's fine. And he's dancing, and then he's like, he whistles, and he gets all his chimney sweep men out. And there's, I was shocked, to be honest, as a brown person, because all of a sudden we see 30 men, white men, with blacked up faces, doing a massive, what I can only describe as a glorified black and white minstrel show on top of the rooftops. A nice excuse for a black and white minstrel show is, you know, you got the soot, and it was the most kind of, yeah, like I say, a very R&B inflected kind of dance. It's very athletic, it's very dexterous, with lots of blacked up faces. And then, no surprise, the colonial guy who's got a ship on top of a house turns around and starts firing cannons at the black faces.
Yeah, yeah.
To get rid of them, just like with the Zulus.
Yeah. And did you notice what he called them as well?
He did say something, and I wrote it down. What was it here?
Oh, I'm so glad you don't have this, and I can
say it. I don't have it. I don't have it. I wrote it down, but I didn't know what it meant. We're being attacked by...
Hottentots.
Hottentot.
Right.
Did you look at what a hottentot is?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a very, very derogatory name for people who come from Southwest Africa. It's a tribe of people... it begins with a K. I can't remember the name of the tribe of people from Africa, but it's the tribe of people where the accent, you know, the clicky accent, the Hottentot. That's what it is. That's what they used to call them, because that's
gem.
Because that's what they actually like sounded like to people.
Oh, thank you, Vintage Series. That is so fucked up.
We're being attacked by Hottentots. Give them what's good for.
Oh,
and then they fire a cannon at them.
He does.
Yeah.
Oh, this is perfect. This isn't even me just projecting with some sort of like racial complex.
Yeah.
This is actually in the film. Oh my God. Thank you, Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Thank you very much, Peter.
That's horrendous, isn't it?
That is horrendous. Thank you for bringing that out,
Peter. I was so... Because I looked disappointed when you were like... You were like, I'm going to take this bit. I had nothing on R&B, mate. I was just... I was all about the Hottentots.
Oh, mate, brilliant. We completed each other. Thank you very much indeed. Right. Have you got anything else about the end of the film?
One minute. Do you know what, mate? I don't think I do.
No.
I think the... just the idea that, like, he's been taught to sort of lighten up the dad... And then he sort of loses his job, you know, and doesn't really care. And he goes to fly a kite. And then he gets given this massive promotion because he's killed the main guy at the bank. Because he's made him laugh so much, he's actually died.
And he gets a promotion.
And he gets a promotion.
I found that really weird as well. Because the way his son says, yeah, my dad died. He was like, he double takes. He's like, I'm sorry, your dad's died. He's like, yeah, he died, yeah. He laughed to death. And I'm like, is this like a form of post-traumatic stress disorder?
And he's flying a kite as well.
Yeah. It's like
your dad's dead. He's flying a kite.
And he loves the fact
yeah.
dead.
Tell you what, do you
he
want
to... death. Yeah. One person in the whole world laughs to death every year. My dad was the lucky guy.
Yeah. Do you want his job?
And then he just carries on as if nothing happened.
Yeah.
Carries on flying his kite.
But
dad's dead.
But it's fucked up because that job that he accepts, the dad, is just... It's as a partner, so that's just going to lead to more stress and more unhappiness and more OCD and more colonialism.
More neglect.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, okay, so I think we've really We've done it. We've done the whole film there.
One more bit as well. Please. Sorry, that I forgot to mention. The fox hunt, where they're riding the horses, they made the fox Irish.
Irish.
Now, I don't know, again, if it's a sort of a satire or something that they wanted to...
Not sort satire. Of, I don't think
it's,
so.
It's not satire.
The film's made mid-60s. Yeah. That's the height of, like, Irish people coming over.
Yeah.
And they were being ostracised a lot.
Yeah.
No dogs, no blacks, no Irish.
So, you know, upper-class people use hounds to chase foxes because they view foxes as vermin and they want them out of the country. So they got an American guy to do an Irish accent.
Was it an American fox. Guy?
Yeah, it was an American guy. Wasn't even an Irish guy.
Because he wouldn't agree to it.
Yeah. So... they got into the fox in Irish accent, and all the hounds are just chasing the fox out, which you can only presume is to represent, you know, Protestants and the way they treated the Irish Catholics, English Protestants treated the Irish Catholics, which is awful. I hope deep down it was satire, and they were saying,
I don't think so.
Do you not think so,
no,
mate?
No. But it was too subtle to be satire.
Yeah.
It's definitely there, though. It's a whole parallel.
It's just nuts.
Keep them out. Keep the immigrants out. Oh, God, I'm so glad we've moved on from those ways of thinking. Right. That was satire. Sharp. Right, so...
It just goes over your head when you're a kid. Like, it's just so far removed. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
And then when you're a little smart-ass 30-year-old trying to pick apart a film...
...to
enter its life, these things stand out quite strikingly.
Exactly, you know?
Yeah. Although, sorry, Pete, you are 29.
Lincolnshire,
and I'm 51. Right, so... let's have a bit of film trivia time, shall we, people? Yes, please.
Yes, mate.
Film trivia time.
Right, okay, a bit of film trivia time, people. What have we got, Pete? Do you want to kick us off?
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Oh, I hate you.
You've got it. Apparently, is something to do with Irish and Scottish prostitutes.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what though, but if it is, and you go back over the film, it's really fucked up. Okay, especially when the dad. Finds like tuppence in his pockets and starts crying with laughter, going supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. My theory is that he got a blowjob off an Irish or Scottish prostitute, and she forgot to ask him for the money.
Right.
And
isn't tuppence also doubles up as a vagina? That tuppence means vagina, doesn't it?
A mucky tuppence.
Yeah. Well, is that a Lancashire thing? Mucky tuppence.
I feel like a mucky tuppence.
I don't know why you had to put mucky in front of it.
It's a phrase, isn't it?
I don't know.
Oh, right.
Mucky vagina.
I don't know. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Right, so that's good. That was a very good point. That was my number one point. Yeah, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Try it, people, our international listeners. Go to Scotland. Go to Ireland. Say it. See what happens.
Yeah. Go to the red light district.
Go to the red light district.
In Ireland or Scotland.
Naked with the tuppence in your hand.
Yeah. A mucky tuppence.
Yeah. Right, so what else have we got? The Nannies Were Men, I've already said that. Dick Van Dyke plays... Yeah, did you know that he plays the old bank owner who laughed to death? He actually plays him. I could not... That is amazing makeup. I thought that... Even now, I thought that was a real old man.
When I watched it, I was like, that's a young actor playing that, because he's just too old and too ridiculous, but I didn't know it was Dick Van Dyke.
It is Dick Van Dyke, yeah. He was so desperate to play the character, because he thought it was so funny, he offered to do it for free. So Disney let him do it for free, because he was a bastard.
Yeah.
Right, have you got any more trivia for us?
The author of the book...
Miserable little cow, wasn't she?
Mary Poppins. Well, she stormed out of the premiere in tears, because she was so appalled at how bad the film was. As well, when the guys, the mother of the kids, when she agrees to stop all the sort of feminist movements that she's doing and decides to just focus on the kids, that was just not in the book at all.
No.
And she wanted it. She was like a real feminist, the woman who wrote the book, and she wanted it to. And she was just... you know, horrified that ending, as she would be.
That she ends up becoming a housewife.
Yeah.
Gives up the whole feminist movement.
Yeah.
Well, if she was here, she'd be loving the show, wouldn't she?
She would, mate, yeah.
Apart from the fact that I'm black, she's probably a bit racist. Right, so, sorry, I'm going to stop playing that card tonight. At some point, the show's finished. I've done it. Right, have you got any more points?
That's it, mate, for me.
Right, okay, that's it from me as well. But don't worry, people, we're not saying that's it, as in we're not going. We will be in about 1 minute, but we're not going just yet. Just need to clear my throat. What we're going to do after this final segue, you got it. Yeah, you got it, yeah. We're going to do the final breakdown, aren't we? We're going to give us out of five for how inappropriate it is.
Yes.
So stay tuned, people.
Bad nostalgia.
Tune in every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on Fab Radio International.
Here we are, children. Come and get your lollipops.
Will ruin your childhood.
Yes, we will. Oh, it's been good to be back, isn't it, Pete?
Mate, it's been great.
Yeah.
I feel like we've hit the ground running as well.
Do you?
Because, because this was a tricky one. And your technical prowess, mate.
Oh, do you think it's coming up?
I think it's been great.
I think that.
Yeah.
If anything.
And it's the first one back.
Yeah. And I've just gone back to it. A duck to water.
Yeah.
Although we say this, we're tempted to fake, we're going to go home and we'll only be able to hear, like, one side of the conversation or something. Yeah, but no.
My synopsis will be blocked out, so that's fine.
Or not.
Yeah.
Right, so, yeah, but it's been a really nice promise to start to the season. You know, we've been a bit ropey at times and stuff, but no, we're there. I feel like it's a solid enough show to talk about and show off about and
definitely.
Listen to it.
What
we got next week? Well, we don't know yet because I haven't decided yet, but what we have got for the series is going to be out of these. It's either going to be Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It's going to be...
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang,
of course.
Bed Knobs and Broomsticks.
The other one's going to be Oliver Twist. And I can't remember... And The Wizard of Oz.
Big hitters, mate.
And it's harder than last series because these are all... Because they're not animation films anymore. They're quite long, these films. So there's a lot of meat to get through.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fascinating.